we know our rights. We know how it works. We are out. We can come out and say that we are lesbians and we have rights. And I think that's very essential.
Making Rainbow Waves, a podcast by Ilga World. Welcome to Making Rainbow Waves, a podcast by Ilga World, where we tell the stories of LGBTI human rights defenders worldwide. My name is Daniele Paletta, and I'm here today with Gulzada Selsan from Kazakh feminist initiative Feminita. Welcome, Gulzada.
Hi. Hi, Daniele.
Thank you so much for being with us today. This is going to be a conversation about, you know, your story as an activist and the human rights situation for our communities in your country, and also for you to tell us a little bit more about your advocacy experience, especially in international human rights bodies. So yeah, I'm going to start with, could you tell me more about your story as an activist? And was there a key moment that made you want to get involved in first person in activism?
Yes, my name is Gulzada Selsan, and I'm 51 years old. I live in Almaty in Kazakhstan. I'm an activist, feminist, lesbian, women's human rights defender, co-founder of Kazakhstan Feminist Initiative, Feminita, which is based in Almaty. So we advocate for rights of lesbian, bisexual, queer, transgender women's rights in Kazakhstan. So I started my civil rights activism when I first time went to a protest with my colleague Shonar Sikerbaeva in 2014. It was very first time when I joined this civil rights protest. I didn't know anything about how it is to be an activist. And we shouted the famous now slogan, Shalket, which is against patriarchal autocratic government. And when in media they started to discuss these two women, they started to confuse us. Are they men or women? Why they look different? So Janara and I, we decided to make this initiative to protect rights of LGBT community rather than to be mistaken, to be part of civil society movement in Kazakhstan. So that's how we started in 2014.
You have continued your work since, and it must, I imagine it must have been like something pretty new for you to like dive into activism, like all of a sudden, right? I imagine you were doing something completely different before. But over the years, I know you've been very, very active in advocating for our communities in your country and in the region. So how would you describe the human rights situation of LGBTI communities in Kazakhstan? And how do you think it has evolved over time?
Mm-hmm. Yes. You're right. We are really involved in advocacy of LGBT rights in Kazakhstan, because we both, Janar and I, have our own backgrounds. So I'm from academia and she's from journalism, and probably that's why we joined this path. As you probably know, that Kazakhstan was a former Soviet country. And if you compare the situation of human rights in former Soviet countries, in my opinion, in Kazakhstan, it is better than in Russia and in some Central Asian countries. And it is worse than in, for example, Baltic countries. So, I should say that that situation that Kazakhstan is better than all our neighboring countries is because we have some refugees coming from Russia and Central Asia. We as activists try to help them to get some, for example, legal help or health help. The officials do not want to make a very, it is visible. They don't brag about that because in overall, Kazakhstan is not friendly for refugees country. However, for LGBT, the recent years, especially when in Russia and in other countries neighboring us, human rights situation for LGBT communities is really worsening, and the anti-gender movement is raising up really highly after this war, etc. So in comparison, it's I would say that better than all these terrible situations in our neighboring countries. I think it is because also due to the advocacy and the activism of LGBT community, LGBT activists in Kazakhstan.
Thanks for sharing that. And I know, I mean, since your name, of course, Feminita is a grassroots queer feminist human rights organization. And as you said, it works to protect the human rights of lesbian, bisexual, queer and trans women, but also women with disabilities, women who engage in sex work. So I was wondering, what is it like for Feminita to be a feminist organization within the LGBTI movement at large? And what feminism means to your LGBTI advocacy, and how do you make intersectionality work in your daily practice?
Yeah. In daily practice, when we introduce Feminita to any auditorium, we say we are intersectional feminists, a collective of lesbian, bisexual, queer, transgender women's activists. So, in my opinion, hate against LGBTI community and misogyny have similar features backed by patriarchal society. Therefore, ourselves as a part of feminist, we put ourselves as a part of a feminist movement. For example, we actively take part of an organization of feminist rallies, marches, and we support all other women or feminist organizations. We try to hold these feminist values. You know, it's really important to be part of larger movement and having allies. And we see these feminist organizations, feminist also grassroots organizations as an ally, very strong movements. So we feel as a part of it.
And I hope they have been welcoming to you as well, of course.
Well, time to time, it depends.
It depends. Okay, so that's an ongoing process. But I think I can also speak for our experience at ILGA World, like the alliances with feminist and LGBTI movements for us is becoming extremely, extremely important. It has always been present, but I think we are trying to make that even more explicit. And especially, you know, in this climate of anti-rights, anti-gender, like movements that are really being very loud and aggressive. And you were also mentioning that they're having an impact in your country as well, right?
That's true, yes.
I know your advocacy is not limited also just to your country or your region, but it has also often reached international human rights bodies at the United Nations, for example. And only last year, we know that the Committee Against Torture, the United Nations Committee Against Torture, thanks to your advocacy, heard about the detention of LGBTI activists, and you obtained a recommendation on the issue. And of course, this is a great result because you managed to bring to light a situation that normally remains hidden, right? So yeah, I was wondering whether you could share with us your experience with engaging in UN mechanisms, both last year on the occasion that I mentioned and in the past. How has that evolved over time?
Mm-hmm. Yes, advocacy at Geneva, the UN committees, it was started in 2016 by Janar Sikirbaeva, the co-founder of Feminitas. She went for the first time. It was UNHRC, and we got the very first recommendation on non-discrimination of LGBT persons based on SOGI, like sexual orientation and gender identity. So it was the first time. It was very successfully advocated by my colleague, and later the next, I don't precisely remember, I think either 17 or 18, I went to CESCR. It's Economical, Social and Cultural Rights Committee. And we also got support of the committee regarding to the registration. It is very essential for these kind of organizations like us, Feminita, to be able to legally register, but we are still not registered. It's so one of the discrimination against the community, because except us, some collectives of LGBT activists try to also register whenever you see you have on your statute the words related to lesbians, bisexuals, etc. Then they try not to register it. We see it as discrimination, but we are not giving up. We are still trying to register. And later in the end of 19, it was UPR, again with the help of ILGA. I went to UPR, and Kazakhstan got 11 recommendations, and one is supported. It is creating an enabling environment for LGBTI community rights activists. You know, it is very important recommendation which was supported. We praised the officials to supporting it. However, when we got back to Kazakhstan and we were invited to discuss these supported recommendations from UPR in Ministry of Justice. It was online because it was COVID time. Kazakhstan was declaring that we are going to make it like in national plan and we are going to work on it. But a few days ago, like a couple of weeks ago, we got attacked by mob in Shymkent. So it was opposite of what we supported as a country. So we made it very clear in other discussions with Ministry of Justice that you are doing the opposite. You have to tell all those offices and other cities that Kazakhstan supported that recommendation. Now we have that obligation. So I think it is. It was the. Maybe it was a good thing that it happened. So to in example to show how it's not to be done. So how they are violating it. If nothing happened, then we couldn't say so they support it and let's move on. Right now we are explaining the officials, the Minister of Justice. And we regularly meet with them and tell them how we see the implementation of the recommendation. So it is probably very new, and it was not the common thing that activist groups advocated and in national level to explaining what should be done, how it should be done, and how to deal with the perception of this heritage from the Soviet times. So in Soviet times we had this legal persecution in our criminal code. We had an article against homosexuality. So how to get rid of all this past. So I think it's the step by step we are working on it, and we are very loud. We are out lesbians in Kazakhstan. We don't hide it, and we go to the meetings and face these officials and Ministry of Justice or Ministry of Internal Affairs to explain them what should be done, how it should be implemented, and why it is beneficial for all citizens, for all people living in Kazakhstan. So we are very out loud to tell the also in community, spreading this kind of courage to make them feel more or less sure about their rights, you know. So we are doing our best.
Thanks for sharing all of that. And first of all, I'm so sorry that you got attacked, and I hope you and all your colleagues are doing okay. I imagine it must be hard. So first of all, I want to send you all my solidarity. And it's just really terrible that visibility always has to come with a cost, right? Because of course, the more you expose yourself and the more people are trying to put you back in your corner. So I think it's extremely important what you're doing, but it's also very hard and comes with a cost. So again, my solidarity and my thanks for what you're doing. In the specific... Well, sorry.
If I may, I would mention that it's not only LGBTI activists are attacked, also political activists. I think the way of autocratic government oppresses the civil society movement is similar to movement. So if you're part of, for example, the working union or political activists or other group of which they see as a threat to the autocratic ruling, then they might organize this kind of the biggest one was in January 2022, and we have to see that LGBTI rights movement is one of the civil society movement along with other movements. Not so they do not differ. If this is LGBT community, then let's do it this way and other way. The oppression is this similar. So we stand together with other civil rights movement. Sometimes some groups do not want us to be part of the civil society movement, but we don't listen because they're not making the agenda. Agenda is made by all parts of civil society movement.
Yeah, and that's exactly like where the solidarity comes in, right? Mm-hmm. Among different groups who may have like very different paths and very different goals and life stories, but everyone is united in these cases, right? So, it's really important. And coming again to the recommendations that you received last year at with the Committee mm-hmm. Against Torture, I wanted to quote what the committee said, if I may. The committee is seriously concerned about the allegations of violence on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity inflicted on persons deprived of their liberty, and harassment and sexual violence inflicted on female detainees by male guards in exchange of favors. The committees said the government should ensure that all allegations of violence against detainees, including violence on the basis of soji, are thoroughly investigated and the suspected offenders are persecuted and, if convicted, punished appropriately, with specific attention paid to allegations of violence against female detainees. So, of course, this is extremely relevant. And as we said, it's not something that it's a reality that's not always come to light, like the situation of prisoners, right? So, yeah, I was wondering, now that the shadow report has been submitted and the recommendations have been made, what happens next, right? How do you follow up on them? And maybe you already have. And if so, like, have you seen any changes in how the government is responding or is interacting with your groups or other groups that have made shadow reports to the UN bodies?
First of all, we informed LGBTI community that we got this kind of recommendation. So the when you explain the community, what are these recommendations and what does it mean, it is very important to give them some they may become more confident, especially for LGBTI activists. It is important, essential to know that they have rights. And the government, they received this kind of recommendation because with all this anti-gender group, they're throwing these fake informations. They're making it see as you are so alone, nobody is going to help you, you have no rights, and every whole world is against you, and you are the only one living in this world and have no rights. So this feeling of insecurity is making some activists, some LGBT members become vulnerable. And after also the COVID time, all this situation of their mental health is not good. In that time, when you spread information that Kazakhstan went there and we explain all the process, how we were sitting there, who said what was the response of this state, how they behave. We share all these details with the community to let them know that not you are not alone, and the state accepted this kind of, so they received it and they have to follow these recommendations, and we are watching it, we are monitoring it. We explain that we monitor, we come up with that. Anytime when the government makes a discussion, a round table on discussion with civil society about this recommendation, we show up and we say we like this and we don't like what you are doing. And I think this work is done very well, and that's why we have different young activists showing up. They're so bold, they're not afraid, they're making some projects for youth, for other groups of LGBTI community. I think that's the result of making seem that we know our rights, we know how it works, we are out, we can come out and say that we are lesbians and we have rights, and I think that's very essential. So these recommendations are very like official language. It's hard to understand for, especially for young people. So we try to explain them with a very friendly way in our meetings, in our groups, group meetings, etc. And when we go online, we make like video talks with the community, and we explain all this importance. I think it gives some confidence to the, and I think that's the very it's a very essential part of, other than advocating in national level and the international level, because in my opinion it was the mistake of the other groups of who were advocating not connecting the community before. So before Feminita, there was some attempts of advocacy. We can see some recommendations, but we never see anyone who did this work with community explaining what those recommendations mean, why it is important for us, how it works, and what you can do to use those changes in your life.
And yeah, as you said, like the bottom line is really to make people understand that they're not alone, because I think even if our contexts and where we come from is very different, I think we in our community, most of us can relate to having experienced that loneliness and that am I the only one, right? And finding out that that's not true, I think it's what opens us up to the world. Sorry, I'm getting a little bit moved by all of this, because it's doing this advocacy work, I find, is also can seem like very remote, very strange. The UN can seem this gigantic, very remote mechanism that has no real impact on people's lives, right? And it takes, as you said, like it takes explaining, it takes bringing people in and telling them like why this is not true, that this actually matters a lot. And so once again, thanks for all the work that you've been doing. I think we're reaching the end of our conversation. Yeah. Maybe not. there's maybe more you want to share. And of course, you're welcome to.
Yeah. So I want to share with one of the ideas that we say to the community is about the UN mechanisms, because the anti-gender movement and all this Russian propaganda is saying that UN is a useless organization. So there's a lot of information like that telling that UN has no teeth. That's all blah blah blah. It doesn't help you. So we explain the community that the implementation of the recommendation is our own interest. So you have to feel that's for me, and that's my rights. It's not because somebody in Geneva wants that, because I want that. So so all these recommendations is all that's about us, and it's our own ownership. So you have to make it own, and it is very the benefit of it for Kazakhstan, for not any other country. So benefit the recommend, if we can't do that, we can just ignore all those recommendations, throw it away, right? Nobody cares. Nobody wants us to be democracy except us. So it is beneficial exclusively to us. So how we explain, so all and that rhetoric of the Kremlin propaganda against UN is not helpful to you. So I think all LGBT communities have to discuss it and to prevent all spreading all this information against UN mechanisms to make it seem like it is very useless. So it is useless if you don't use it. So nobody is going to make a rule in your home. So all these rules that is written on the paper is our own rule, because we advocated for it. So I and Janar, we went with these requests, and we got that recommendation according to the convention that we accepted as Kazakhstan. So this, so Kazakhstan is our country, and we make rules. I think we have to talk about that a lot, and to not to throw away all those efforts that we are making.
I completely agree, and I really want to thank you for being here, for explaining all your work and the human rights situation in your country. And I think your words are going to resonate with a lot of people that hopefully will be listening to us. So thank you so much for having been with us today.
Thank you, Daniel.
Making Rainbow Waves is a podcast by Ilga World. This episode was hosted by Daniele Paletta and edited by Kevin Muachiro. You can find every episode on all streaming platforms, and transcriptions are available on ilga.org. Thanks for listening.